Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Friday. Live in L.A., it's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. A lot of things going on in America right now. I tell you what. Wife's vaccinated now.
Great.
I'm vaccinated now.
I, too, am vaccinated.
When did you get vaccinated?
Recently.
I didn't
post it all over social media because people... I have, like, a limit for how much, like, arrogance, ignorance I can tolerate in my sphere.
It starts with zero for me.
Well, unfortunately, the internet is, like, it's not where our best and brightest line up, so...
You know, you can use those filters.
I know, my filter's not really that strong.
What's that
Someone
mean?
Told me I was obese today.
First of all,
tighten these filters up.
Okay, look at first of all.
I know.
Look at you
obese.
Right now. You may look better today than you've ever looked.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you. That's kind.
I know.
I'm not obese. That's like I don't go to the internet for advice on obesity or vaccines. I go to my doctor.
Now both of us are full after Jersey Mike subs. That's different.
Yes, that's just, yes. Then I'll take that jab because it's like it's nice and full. Although it's not healthy.
Yeah, turkey.
Well, I get the Italian, so mine probably has a few more calories than you. It's got more meat, mustard. Yeah.
So it's I am selling my Brooklyn stock, but I want to get to this first. So there's a story out today. A former Jet, I love this bite, by the way. Former Jet Matt Khalil, who's a great USC player, great in the NFL, went to the Jets briefly, end of his career. He said they didn't give Sam Darnold any room to grow. He said everybody oohed and aahed about Zach Wilson at BYU's pro day, rolled left, threw across his body. He goes, I've seen Sam do that a million times. It's funny. There's game tape of Sam doing the exact same thing against players in the NFL for touchdowns, and Zach Wilson does it. We're like, oh, my God, against air. And the Jets have decided to draft Zach Wilson and get rid of Sam, and I wish them both luck, but it is interesting. I've said this. Everybody needs help. Nobody can do it alone. Everybody needs a kingmaker. Everybody needs... All these people on these political shows, they were nobodies until they got an MSNBC or the late Roger Ailes. They're kingmaker. Everybody needs a kingmaker. Okay? Sam Darnold has been criminally undercoached. At USC, the coordinator he had got fired. Never been a coordinator again or a head coach. Adam Gase fired twice. He now goes to young ascending coaches that people love. Matt Rhule won at Temple and Baylor. He took over grease fires at both. He won at both immediately. Joe Brady's 31. He's the next McVay. He's already getting job offers at 31 years old and interviewing for head jobs. So he will not be criminally undercoached. Doesn't mean he'll be a star. But I want to remember. Let me give an example. Alex Smith. Now, Sam is bigger than Alex, stronger than Alex, and more athletic than Alex Smith. Got a better arm. Alex Smith came into the league. First two coaches, Mike Nolan, Mike Singletary. He was considered a complete bust. Jim Harbaugh came in. Alex Smith went 19-5-1. Then he went to Andy Reid, made a Pro Bowl. Look at Alex Smith's record with his first two coaches. 19-31, completed 57% of his throws, and a passer rating of 72. He was a bust. With Harbaugh and Reed, his completion percentage skyrockets. His passer rating skyrockets. His touchdown-to-interception ratio skyrockets. And he goes 69-31-1. Coaching matters. Alex Smith was done. He was a bust. No, he didn't have competent head coaching. And then he went to Harbaugh and Andy Reid and became a Pro Bowler. Alex Smith, by the way, last year Alex Smith playing on a leg with Ron Rivera was 5-1. Playing on one leg. Because again, he had a real coach who built a real defense and a real running game. So that's all I'm saying with Sam Darnold is you got to give some of these guys Some people, it's one thing having average coaching, Ryan Tannehill. But when you're criminally undercoached, like Alex Smith was for his first 4 or 5 years, or like Sam Darnold, or Ryan Tannehill, you got to give a guy a chance. Nobody does this alone. Nobody, I don't care if you're a talk show host, you're a mayor, you're a dentist, nobody can do it without help. And when your help, actually, Ryan Khalil said, they wouldn't let him ad lib. They wouldn't let Sam ad lib. Play came in, run the play. He's like, if you know Sam, it's not what he is. Go to his game tape against USC, against Texas, against Penn State. Sam's got to be a little loose. He'll make mistakes, but you got to let him move a little. He's like Lamar Jackson. Don't overcoach him. You got to let Lamar move a little. Josh Allen, by the way, Buffalo. You got to let Josh Allen move. That's part of his weaponry. There you go. I know you're such a homer, Listen, what I believe in is what I believe in. As I always say, I often am wrong on an argument, and then sometimes I'm wrong for a year, but I know I'm right. RG3 luck, Kobe Shaq. There are times I know Sam Darnold can play. Not saying he's going to be great, but you start looking around, the pieces he has, the competency of coaching, he'll be just fine. I mean, I'll give you an example. Jared Goff with Jeff Fisher, Jared Goff with Sean McKay. He was a catastrophe.
I don't know that there is a better example of that.
He was a catastrophe.
Everyone that was could not play a lick. He was a bust.
2 years later, Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you got to get coaching. You can't do this stuff alone. One other thing. So Charles Barkley came out. Now I do not resent super teams. As I've said, I bounced all over the country to try to find better coworkers and better companies. I would be complete and utter hypocrite to rip Kevin Durant to go to the Warriors. Now, I thought leaving the Warriors for Kevin wasn't very smart. But I can't rip guys for mobility because I've done it my whole life. And the reason I've done it, I want a better city. I want better coworkers. I want a higher ceiling. So here's Charles Barkley on TNT last night. He is anti-Brooklyn Nets.
Well, I'm always going to root against Brooklyn. I'm always root against Brooklyn.
Why?
I just don't like the way they put that team together. So I'm rooting against.
Wait. Time out. What don't you like about it?
Guy
traded there. Another guy signed there.
No, guys. You know, I'm never going to be I'm never going to be a proponent of guys teaming up. Never going to be for it. So I'm rooting for anybody to be Brooklyn.
By the way, I love Charles, but he did join Houston, who had Scottie Pippen. It didn't work out. He and Pippen didn't get along. But listen, I want to personalize this. If you're listening or watching my show, and let's say you're a coder, you love tech, you video games, whatever it is, you play video games. I'm rooting for you to go to Google, Apple, wherever, Oracle, all these great companies. Why? Because you work with better people. It's more fun to work with better people. It's, you know, LeBron James broke into this league and he was, you know, people say he's not loyal. I thought LeBron was too loyal. So he stayed in Cleveland forever. He was like there 7 years, got him to a finals. They were totally overwhelmed by San Antonio and Tim Duncan. But LeBron then went to the Olympics. And when LeBron went to the Olympics, he came back and went, man, basketball is so much fun when I can throw the alley-oop and receive it. I don't have to do I can do both. And LeBron decided, oh, wow. I mean, we've all done this in our life, right? You move to a city, you check out restaurants, and you find the 3 or 4 restaurants that are just better. It's got better food, they got a better chef, they got better service. And you don't end up going to 1,000 different restaurants. You find about 3 to 4 you go to over and over and over and over. Got better people. Got better food, better service, better price, better. It's in a better location. Upgrade to better. Anytime you can upgrade to better, do it. So I am not anti-Brooklyn Nets. Now, my issue with the Brooklyn Nets is that they are a horrendous defensive team. And in the last 25 years, you cannot win an NBA championship if you're just in the bottom half of defenses. The exception, the Kobe Shaq Lakers were 19th in defense, but as we told you earlier this week, they were number one the year before, and they were number one once the playoffs started that year because they could play defense, but they were so dominant, they weren't going to play a ton in the regular season. Rick Bucher now joins me live, Fox Sports NBA analyst. So I said this. I think the Nets are a little bit of the Clippers last year. Really noisy. Lot of stories. I fell in love with them. I fell in love with the talent in the roster. And then I wake up and go, of course, they don't play together. And I think it's impossible to solve right. your chemistry in the playoffs against the best coaches and the best schemes and the best teams. And I'm looking at Brooklyn and I'm like, they're the Clippers. I'm falling in love with them. They're not great defensively. Clippers are pretty good defensively, but they played together 7 games. Your thoughts on that?
Right. Yeah, no, I didn't buy the Nets from the very beginning as a title contender for a multitude of reasons. Obviously, I didn't anticipate that they weren't going to play together or play together as little as they have. But the defensive element and the lack of experience, this brand new coaching staff coming together, or a brand new head coach, simply made me question, can they get there? Even as odd as this season is. But the number one element is, as you've pointed out, and I've been saying from the beginning, and Nets fans hate me for pointing it out, is the fact that their defense simply isn't good enough to win championships. And when they're rolling over teams in the regular season, and everybody makes a big deal about their offense and says, well, this is their offense, is it's going to make up for their defense. We've never seen that be the case when it comes to winning. Because the East is so uneven, I still question whether they can get past Philadelphia. I like Milwaukee more this year than I ever have. But when we're talking about winning a title, they simply don't have the requisite ability defensively to be able to do it. And to your point, the Lakers, yes, fell off one year and still won it. But they knew that they could play defense, and they had defensive players. And even if the Nets had never demonstrated collectively that they could play that level of defense, if I looked at their personnel and said, you know what, they just need to tap what they have, then I might be willing to go along with it. But I'm looking at Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Joe Harris. Like, there are not good defensive players on their team that you are going to close with. So when the game gets a little more physical and the pace slows down, that's going to diminish what they're able to do offensively. And then defensively, can they live in that kind of a game? The teams that I've seen play this year who play that way, the Knicks, the Sixers, The Nets offensively have struggled against those teams for that very reason. And that's what they're going to get a steady diet of when it comes to the postseason. And that's why I haven't believed that they are championship material from the very beginning.
So I made an observation. Lakers lost last night, but I was watching them a few nights ago. And I thought to myself, last year's Lakers team felt old. It was Rondo. It was Dwight Howard. It was JaVale McGee. Mm. It felt old in key spots. Danny Green. And I watched them the other night without LeBron and AD, and I thought, you know, they've got about 7 guys in their prime. Dennis Schroeder's in his prime. Kyle Kuzma's in his prime. And I started going, Montrezl Harrell now moves into his prime. And I thought, LeBron doesn't have to carry this team. If LeBron didn't play this year, it's a 500 NBA team. It would mop up on the bad 8. It'd lose to the top 8.
Right.
And it'd be hit and miss in the middle 20. Right. And I said to myself,
fair.
This is actually the best team LeBron's ever played with in terms of athletic, in their prime. Even in Miami, D-Wade struggled playing back-to-backs. You know, I mean, there was right. Chris Bosh had injuries. I look at this Laker team the other night, and I'm like, I think the overall roster is better than we think if you take LeBron out. It's a solid roster.
I agree, and there's a reason for that, because LeBron James is 36 years old, and he and the Lakers know that while he still has the basketball IQ and the ability to utilize pieces around him, he can't do everything that he's done previously. And this is still the hitch in what they have. All the pieces that you mentioned, for the most part, their strength is at the defensive end of the floor. And it's why they haven't fallen off defensively since LeBron and AD have been out, which is really remarkable considering how good those two are defensively. But offensively, this team is still going to rely on LeBron James as the playmaker more than ever. And you're going to see it when AD comes back and LeBron is still on the sideline. their offense is not going to take this huge jump. As good as AD can be or productive as he can be offensively, he's not a playmaker. He doesn't create shots for other guys. And that is the element here that I question, do the Lakers have enough? You're right. The talent overall is probably, I wouldn't put it ahead of those Miami Heat teams. There was a special group there. They still had a lot of guys very similar that were in their prime, and they were in the East, so there was a difference there. But this still comes down to LeBron James having to do a tremendous amount at the offensive end to make them championship caliber. And I'll be willing to see if they're able to do that. By the way, you underplayed Charles Barkley. You called yourself a hypocrite. Charles Barkley is the biggest hypocrite in talking about he can't root for the Nets, because you downplayed it. Look, he didn't join Scottie Pippen and Hakeem Olajuwon in Houston. He asked to be traded to the Houston Rockets. That was his number one priority. I've got the receipts. And then he recruited Scottie Pippen to come to Houston to join him. They didn't get along. They realized they didn't like each other, and that undermined the whole thing. But for him to suggest that he doesn't like guys getting together to chase a ring is just as it is hypocrisy 101, because I remember I was there. Charles did the exact same thing in going to the Rockets.
By the way, finally, Clippers. I do think second-year Paul George, Kawhi probably do have better chemistry. I said this, Joy and I, the longer we work together, the better the chemistry. It's the reality. Longer you're in a marriage, sure, you can finish each other's sentences. That's the reality. I do think the Clippers' chemistry is better, but I don't know if I can jump back on the bandwagon. Is it safe?
I believe that it is safe. Now, are they going to win it? There's so many things that could still potentially go wrong, injury-wise, matchups, etc. But I have far more confidence. First of all, anybody who is reluctant to get on that bandwagon because the Clippers disappointed them last year, this is a completely different Clippers team. They are playing in a completely different way. I can't underscore the difference that it makes in having a Luke Kennard rather than a Landry Shamet, or a Serge Ibaka rather than a Montrezl Harrell. And most important, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard having been humbled. Maybe Kawhi Leonard more so than Paul George. What I am seeing from Kawhi Leonard is him getting back to the blue-collar defensive gem that he can be. He wasn't that last year. He wanted to come in and he wanted to be the guy orchestrating the offense, and it was all about him. He's gotten back to basics, and he's allowing Paul George to do what he does best, which is be more of a playmaker at the offensive end. And then adding Rajon Rondo, getting Rajon Rondo for Lou Williams, to me was the final stroke that they needed. I had the question, does Rondo still have enough to demonstrate that these guys, that they should respect him? And what he's shown early on is, yes, he does. He's not physically the same player that he's been in the past, but he's a little bit in that Jason Kidd in Dallas mode, where he still has the IQ, he still has the brains, he can still make enough plays to be respected, and he makes everybody happy to be on the floor, because they know if they run the floor hard, he's going to get them the ball. If they fight for position, he's going to get them the ball. And most important, he's going to hold everybody accountable. He is the voice that they needed in that locker room and on the floor. And so are the Clippers going to win it? I don't know. Are they going to come out of the West? I don't know. But this is a dramatically different team than the one we saw play last year. They're not going to fail for the same reason they did last year.
Good stuff, Rick Bucher. Have a good weekend, buddy. Appreciate it.
You too, Colin.
All right. That nice red background on Friday just jumps out at you. John Beck, former NFL quarterback, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields quarterback coach before the end of the hour. Very interested. He played in the NFL, played at BYU. He's Zach Wilson's quarterback coach. Very, very, he's down in Irvine now. He's coaching all these guys up, including Justin Fields, who I like. I don't know enough about Zach Wilson to have a strong opinion. Justin Fields, I've watched. I know enough people that know him. I do have a strong opinion.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tomorrow on Fox, the MLS is back. Catch Austin FC as they make their league debut against Carlos Vela and LAFC. The action kicks off at 5:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
They have two new stadiums, so they now have 23 soccer-specific stadiums. It's actually been fascinating to watch. They didn't have the academy system when they began. Now they do. So you have an academy in your hometown, like a Chicago or Seattle. And if you can create these young stars, you would get their rights through the academy. So they're what they want you to do in all these cities. In Austin now, they'll have their own academy, and they'll just hold clinics, and they'll try to find great players in Texas. And if you put them in your academy, you get their rights. It's a smart, smart system. And it's been fascinating. We've watched a league in the last 20 years go from nothing to this. They have these soccers. Remember when they first started, they were playing in big stadiums? Mm-hmm. Now they've got their own stadiums. They've got TV networks.
And great fan bases.
Great, intense. It's really, I'll tell you something. I like the business side of sports, and I think it's been fascinating. Don Garber's done a great job. And the quality is significantly better now. And you are seeing under 26-year-old players. You know, Christian Pulisic is obviously our Wes McKinnon. There's some unbelievable talent. But congrats to Austin. Well,
Matthew McConaughey is a part owner, right?
Yes. Will Ferrell owns part of L.A. Good stuff. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, the Patriots brought back Cam Newton for 2021, but they are not really fully committed to him long-term, so looking for a quarterback they can build a future with. New England is a strong candidate to move up in the draft to get one of the top prospects this year, but Bill Belichick isn't giving any hints about whether they will make a move for one in the draft.
There are always players at every spot that fall into that category that you have to, you know, you're going to have to draft higher than really what they've done, but if you're willing to do that, and that's what they need to do to get the player, then you draft him at a higher spot and hope that his production eventually, reflects the potential that you saw in him.
Well, doesn't sound like he's thrilled with the idea of moving up in the draft.
Well, he has made more since he's been a coach of the Patriots. He has made 82 draft day trades. That is 25% higher than the second team. Philadelphia's got 60. So, Bill, like, I really believe what's happening is Denver or New England, one or both will move up.
I think you have to. He called the group of quarterback prospects interesting. So whatever you want to make of that. They have 10 picks in this draft.
Yeah.
They're getting 8 players back that opted out last year, and they were very aggressive in the offseason and free agency signing guys as well. So, I mean, I would not be surprised about anything at this point in this draft. The only thing is we know that the first 3 picks are going to be quarterbacks. So you really have to be in love with one of the guys that falls unless you're moving up to 4. What's it going to take to move Atlanta off
so
that?
Thomas Dimitroff used to be the GM who was Belichick's guy, but Atlanta flushed him out. So, you know, that because I keep thinking Belichick, if he had Dimitroff, you know, because so many Belichick disciples are around the league. Guy running Tennessee, you know, guy running right now,
Texans.
But Atlanta's GM Dimitroff was a Belichick guy, and he's gone. So is that an advantage to Denver? Denver, by the way, has a new GM that probably doesn't have the connections of a Belichick through the league. So I think New England's going to move up. You can be patient. Carolina was. But in the end, if you're not dynamic at quarterback, you're just not going to beat Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. You're just not. I don't care how great of a coach you are.
Denver, to me, has more potential to move up to the Atlanta spot than the Patriots, to me. Because I feel like the Patriots would wait until draft day to see if someone's falling and then make a move.
Also, Denver's got some really talented players.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a tight end. They got a couple of receivers. I mean, Denver's got some people they could move. I mean, so that helps. A couple draft picks. A lot of guys, when you make a move, Belichick may not want only draft picks because Belichick's system is complex.
He likes veterans.
Yeah, you know, Bill may say, okay, we'll take your number 2 corner and pick. So, you know, it's fun. This is why I think this will be the most watched NFL draft ever.
So we're back to talking about contracts again. We finally got out of this with Dak Prescott, and now we have to talk about it with Aaron Rodgers. Not the same situation, obviously, but His future with the Packers has been making headlines recently. Aaron himself acknowledged that he could finish his career somewhere else. Tight end Jordy Nelson was one of Rodgers' favorite targets for years in Green Bay, and he is very confused, just like everyone else, about what the Packers are doing and how they're handling him.
I don't know what they're doing. I can't answer any of those questions. It's mind-blowing sometimes, especially, I mean, when he comes out and has an MVP year. If they don't want to commit or do whatever they want to do to, I mean, I don't know, show appreciation or whatever it is for him the next 2 years. Seems like it'd be a pretty easy and simple move that I would say 100%, if not 99.9% of people would agree with.
It's very confusing what's happening with Rodgers. Now, here's what the situation is. He's entering the second year of his four-year, $134 million extension.
Yes.
That he signed in 2018 through the 2023 season. So the extension made him the highest paid player at the time. $33.5 million is what he's making now, and that's fifth amongst quarterbacks. So he's not the highest paid quarterback, but his cap hit
is huge.
Is the highest in the NFL at $37.2 million. So they could restructure his contract and give him, basically, like, stretch it out, give them salary cap space, and have, like, fake void years, basically.
Right.
But you generally don't do that with your franchise quarterback. So it's a little bit of, you know, kind of like disrespect to do something like that, to stretch it out. They could sign an extension, which is what the issue is. If they signed an extension committing to him past the 2023 season, then they could also be gifted with a lot of salary cap relief. Well, they don't want to sign the extension.
Because Jordan Love was the number first round draft pick.
I guess. Maybe they're seeing something in Jordan Love that everybody else isn't seeing.
Maybe I don't watch practice film.
I don't watch the Green Bay Packers practice film. I can admit that. But he didn't win the backup job last year. He was the third string quarterback last year.
Not great.
While he couldn't win the backup job last year, Aaron Rodgers won the league MVP last year.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's where my confusion lies. We talk about this all the time. You have to cater to stars. It is the way the world works now.
Just deal with it.
Deal with it. Adjust the way that you think about things. Right. If you want to be successful in sports now, you have to be A, aggressive, and B, you're going to have to deal with stars. And maybe you'll get a star that is Tom Brady, and he doesn't have a problem giving up money.
Right.
I wouldn't count on that. Most people don't like giving up money that they earn. Most people don't like doing that, even if it's a salary cap space. But there's ways that you can stretch this out, and he doesn't have to give up money, like a contract extension. What are you worried about?
Yeah.
What are you worried about? I don't know. And on top of you not wanting to extend him, you're not really being aggressive now. So if you weren't going to extend him, why wouldn't you be more aggressive now while you have him under this contract?
These are
to try and win while you have him.
Very reasonable suggestions.
You know what? I think I might be too reasonable of a person. This is what I'm starting to learn. I think I need to be less reasonable.
Well, this goes back to my theory that Green Bay has been so relevant for so long. They're not willing to bleed Aaron's, like, they're willing to take the cap hit now with Aaron, but they don't want to pay for Aaron if he's not there, because they want to be relevant. What they're petrified of in Green Bay, because they're already the smallest city, is irrelevance. They're petrified of irrelevance.
Well, if Jordan Love can't play.
Well, I know, but that what scares that, like, Tampa's been irrelevant forever. So their whole thing is, hell, we'll fake out. We'll use Tom Brady money. We'll pay for him 5 years after he's gone, because Tampa's used to being irrelevant and they're comfortable with it. Because when they've been great, they've won Super Bowls. They're like, Super Bowl or crappy. Green Bay is always relevant, and so they're petrified of being irrelevant.
I don't like making plans based off of outliers.
I get it.
Right? Like, people who move to LA and then they're like, I'm going to be a star, and their plan to become a star is to just walk down the street and get discovered.
Yeah,
that happens. But that's your plan. Your plan. So you are, as the Green Bay Packers, planning for Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love being a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah.
That's your plan.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I just wouldn't count on that. I'm not saying Jordan Love won't be a Hall of Famer. I don't know. I'm just saying that really feels like an outlier situation. So the Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2020 will be inducted next month after the original ceremony was postponed. And this class is headlined by the late Kobe Bryant. And it was announced that Michael Jordan will present him at the enshrinement ceremony.
That's good. I like that. It's appropriate.
I do think this is appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always thought Kobe idolized him and played like him, and his first 5 years sounded like him. He was like doing an MJ impersonation for 5 years.
And they had an incredible relationship. And when we saw Michael speak at Staples Center at Kobe's ceremony there.
Most emotional I've ever seen Michael.
Most emotional I've ever seen Michael. And it really, I don't know how you could watch that and not ball your eyes out, because you could really, when someone who isn't generally an emotional person breaks down like that, you feel it even more, because it's not something that they live in. But it's also just, it's Michael talking about somebody that we all admired and, you know, obviously passed in a tragic way, in such a, that you could tell they had a true relationship. Like, he's not just somebody who knew him who was up there speaking about it. So this class is pretty incredible, and that's going to be a very nice night.
Yeah, I could talk to Michael Kobe comparisons for an entire show. It was fascinating. I watched both in their prime, and they really were. Michael was stronger. Kobe was more artistic as a performer, less reliant on like individual stock moves.
They both had a similar obsession for the sport as well.
Yeah, Kobe with better long range jumper. Michael stronger, better at attacking the rim a little bit. But very similar players. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
The quarterbacks that are going number 2 and 3 in the draft are coached by a guy named John Beck, who played in the NFL, played at BYU. He joins us next live.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
There's a company called 3DQB. John Beck is their motion mechanics instructor. He played in the NFL for 6 years, probably the best football player in the Mountain West Conference in the last 20 years. He owned the conference for 3 years. By the way, 3DQB has had Drew Brees and Matt Stafford and Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan and Eli Manning and Tim Tebow, and now it has Justin Fields, who I just love, and Zach Wilson, who's talented, but I don't know a ton about, and John Beck is now joining us live. All right, let's cut to the chase here. First of all, Justin Fields. What is your favorite quality? Because you just walked off the field from Trey Lance, and you see these guys every day. What is your favorite Justin Fields quality that you think will work in the NFL?
To me, it's when I watch him play in the big games, when I watch him play in the playoffs, the national championship, to make the plays that he does on that stage and to do it in an environment where he's getting knocked around while injured.
Yeah.
That's, to me, the biggest thing that I just say. This is a dude that can play on the big stage and make the big plays. And he showed it, especially in those games, which I love that. I love that about him.
By the way, general managers have told me for years in the NFL, they like players from the SEC who were great in the biggest games. It matters because it's the closest thing to the NFL in college football. And you play in Columbus, those feel a little bit like NFL games with 80,000 people in the environment and the TV network. So, you know, you quarterbacked in Washington under the Shanahans and under Kyle. What is Kyle like in quarterbacks? What does Justin do that Kyle Shanahan would like or appreciate?
Kyle wants a quarterback that can process things quickly and be able to deliver balls all over the field. He wants an offense that when it needs to drive the ball down the field, it can. When he needs to drive it in tight windows, it can. When he needs to be able to work off key defenders, and essentially I have two spots, multiple locations that I have to get the ball to almost within the same timing. Can they put their feet in the ground fast and do that? I think that's why you see, you know, certain quarterbacks really thrive in Kyle's system. It's not all just one way. It's a variety of ways. The athleticism helps. I know most people say, oh, well, he wants a guy that can run. He doesn't need a guy that can run with the football, but he likes having a guy that can get on the edge in the play pass game. That's important to him. And then get him on the edge, sell like we're going keeper, and then put our foot in the ground and attack something downfield fast. I think you saw guys in a system in the past that did a great job of doing that, and he's looking for somebody that can do the same now.
By the way, you work with Justin Herbert, And we liked him here on the show because I worked in the Pacific Northwest and I watched him play 20 times for Oregon. And I kept saying, I don't get the doubts. He's a 4-point biology major. He's a good kid. He's big. Did you know when you were working with him, did you have a sense, oh, Lord, this guy is just different?
He is maybe the most talented thrower I've ever been around. He is just so gifted, so talented. And you're right. He's a student of the game. He has a great work ethic. When you sit down in the meeting room with him, he does all the things right. I had watched Justin play, and I knew he was a top draft pick. But until I got to be around him every day and just see him when he comes out onto the field, I knew any veteran player that was going to be around him, when they got to watch him throw, was just going to say, wow, that is a dude that like we can follow. That's a guy that can play in the NFL for sure. So I could never have told anybody, oh, he's going to go out and win Rookie of the Year. I mean, you don't know those things because so much of that is dependent on the team that he goes to, the situation, the guys around him. But he's absolutely one of the most talented throwers, most capable throwers I've ever been around.
Yeah, I said this one time. It's like Thanksgiving and a Nerf ball. The ball, he just, it throws so casually. Like some guys, you can sense their mechanics. Like it's a little uncomfortable. He is just flipping that thing all over the, it's like a seed. He's just flipping it all over the yard. Now, I hear Zach Wilson. People say, oh my God, he's got Aaron Rodgers capability. I hear he can slam dunk at 360. He's an athlete. I hear he's also, he loves chaos. I worry about that. Chaos can be rolling your eyes at a play that's called. Sometimes you get addicted to stuff you're good at. You tell me about Zach Wilson. What do you love? What does he have to work on?
Yeah, I don't understand the chaos part. To me, I think what it is I would use the word, I think he enjoys the challenge of thriving in an environment that requires the quarterback to make those athletic throws, which to some quarterback, that equals chaos, and now I'm out of rhythm. I'm in a position I don't want to be in. I believe that Zach looks at those as, I'm prepared for those moments. Let there be that chaos because I believe I've trained myself in a way that's going to allow me to make those difficult throws but make them accurately. I've had the chance to be around him for 3 years since his freshman year, and he's worked his tail off for those 3 years here with us at 3DQB, and that's the purpose behind his training here. So he's super gifted, very, very athletic kid, very twitchy, can make those special throws look easy. I think that's why teams are really high on him. So, of course, like any other rookie, he's going to have to go through a learning curve. He's going to have to adapt to the NFL game, right? But I think he has so many traits and tools. The number one thing that I love most about Zach is his desire to pick himself. Like, he believes in himself. He's just, if he has an opportunity to make that tough throw or that situation is going to be where, hey, can you do it? I love the fact that he always believes, yes, I can. And to me, you have to have that if you're going to thrive. And if he does go to the New York Jets, he absolutely is going to need that to thrive in that environment.
Yeah. By the way, can you always tell when a guy has it or not? I mean, you would never say it publicly if a kid doesn't. But do you have sometimes you come out of these workouts and think, I don't know if he's going to make it. And can you tell instantly that's going to work?
There's absolutely players that when you watch them on the field, you can recognize ability. You can recognize where they can get to. How close is this person to his potential, right? What's his ceiling going to be? You can feel those things. They show up. You can also sense a guy's his drive, his passion for the game, his love of the game, the sense of how much he's going to put into it. Those things you can tell. The difficult part about quarterbacking is the things that we don't know, the uncertainty of the team, the situation, the organization, the coaching staff, the fit. All of those things a quarterback depends on. Drew Brees used to always say this to me when I trained with him. There's no position in sports where the team depends on them like the quarterback, but there's also no position in sports where they depend on their team like the quarterback.
Yeah.
So to me, I've seen guys all the time. They come out, they can put together a great workout, but it's a team sport. They depend on so many things. So for all these guys, Justin, Zach, Kyle, Trey, all of them, so much of the next part of their journey is going to be who picks them, and then what happens after they're picked.
Yeah, Brees had a couple years he struggled when he was highly paid and the O-line wasn't good, and then he restructured his deal and he got a better offensive line, and Drew Brees suddenly ended up in Super Bowls. The reality is the better players up front, the more you can throw it on 3rd and 2 and not 3rd and 9, the better football player you become. John Beck, it's called 3DQB, lot of notable clients. Great talking to you for a first time. Love to have you back on, and thank you so much, John.
Yep, you're welcome.
He had just worked out 5 minutes earlier with Trey Lance. So he is literally working those guys, coming in, talking, going back out and working with these guys. It's down in Irvine, California, and they're all down there. Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow was down there. Tebow was down there. We live where we're doing our show right now is about 10 minutes max to UCLA. Brady works out there all the time. And then there's down in Irvine at these quarterback camps because you have perfect weather down here. You got Irvine, Orange County, got a lot of space.
Thought everyone hated California.
It's very nice here. Very nice. Really like it, especially that grocery store.
You love that grocery store.
I'm not saying the name of it because it'll get clogged up and I won't be able to get in.
Yep.
So my daughter just texted me. What do you want from that grocery store? I said everything. Charge it to dad's account. Navien, enjoy spa-like comfort. Saving your water bill. Efficient. Go to tanklessmadesimple.com. Tanklessmadesimple.com. Look up Navien water filters.